Okay, we will we were doing the further readings in lesson one. Now we come to we completed last time section one in the further readings. And now we have section two. This is actually a series of 10 sayings which are almost identical. There's just little variations in the words. So if you could do one sentence as the model, then you can really figure out all of them. It's just a matter of changing the words, the key words. Okay, the first one, these are actually the first 10 sutta. Each one of these in the Anguttara Nikaya is a separate sutta. So these are the first 10 suttas in the Anguttara Nikaya. Okay, so I take the first one. Maybe you could read it after me, just to get familiar with the sound. Nāhaṁ bhikkhave anyaṁ ekarūpampi samanupassāmi yam evaṁ purisasa cittaṁ Pariyadaya titati. It's pariyadaya titati. Yeah, I heard pariyad. What I heard was pariyadaya, but it's long a pariyadaya. Titati. Yatai dang bhikkave. Itti rupang bhikkave purisasa cittang pariyadaya titati. Okay, well, anybody brave enough now? Good. Let's do it just, we'll do word by word.
Okay, word by word.
Okay. Nāhaṁ,
not I.
Yeah, nāhaṁ, we should explain it.
Explain it?
Yeah, it's...
By part of speech?
Well, here we have nāhaṁ, that's not an actual word itself. It's a sandhi.
Oh, a sandhi,
yeah,
okay. Uh-huh.
Of... You, right, right. Na and ahang joined together becomes nahang. Yeah. Yeah. Rupang. Yeah.
Single form.
Yeah, or one form.
Yeah.
Okay, a single form. Okay.
Even.
Yeah. P is even, yeah.
Samanupassami.
Yeah.
Do I perceive?
Right.
Thus.
Which, yeah. Which young is something like which, evang is so, to such an extent. Purisasa.
Of a man.
Right.
Mine.
Right.
Pariyadaya. Pariyadaya.
Yeah.
Overcome and remain.
Right. Actually, it would be more like as this. Yeah. Yata is as, and idang is this. Then the y is added here. It's just a way of joining, because if you say yata idang, you have this long A and an I, and just to join them smoothly, one inserts a Y there. It's just what they call this euphonic conjunct letter, just for the sake of euphony. Instead of saying yata idang, and it goes more smoothly to say yata idang. Also, I found in Chinese you have the same thing. The E becomes ya when preceding another vowel sound. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Itti, it's a short I. Itti rupang. Yeah. Yeah, the form of a woman. Yeah.
The female form.
Yeah.
Bikave.
Yeah.
Oman.
Yeah.
Purisa, sa, males of men.
The mind of the men.
Chikam. Purisa, sa, chikam.
Yeah.
The mind of men.
Yeah.
Pariyadaya.
Yeah.
Titati.
Yeah. Yeah.
Having overcome and remain.
Right. Okay. Very good. Excellent.
So I put it together in English.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Yeah.
As this, the form of a woman.
Yeah.
The form of a woman, O monk, having overpowered the mind of a man, remains.
Excellent. Why don't you translate the rest of the Anguttara Nikaya? You got the first sutta. Okay, I just want to explain. Well, they say that they will explain it in a later lesson. But this form pariyadaya is what is called, the grammarians call it gerund or absolutive. You see, in Pali, you don't go to the temple and talk to the monks, but rather, having gone to the temple, I spoke to the monks. Or you don't go to the store and buy some bread, but having having gone to the store, I bought some bread. In other words, when you have a chain of verbs, instead of putting, I did this, and I did that, and I did this, you use the form, having done this, having done that, having done this, I did that. And so pariyadaya is one of these gerund forms. It's called gerund or absolutive. We'll get to it. Okay, so in this case, the form of a woman having overcome or overpowered the mind of a man remains or persists there. Last week, in his sermon, Shifu urged everybody to make a determination to renounce and to go forth, to leave home. And thinking it's very easy, but this sutta, the series of suttas, explains why it ain't so easy. Okay, so the next sutta, it's really the same, except in this case, I don't want to lose time on this, but to go on to the next lesson. So it's in this case, it's Anyang Eka Sadang. The only thing different here is Sadda. Sadda is sound. The next one, Eka Gandang, no other scent or smell. Then the next one, Anyang Eka Rasang, no other taste or flavor. The next one is Anyang Eka Potabang. Potabang is touch, a tactile sensation. Touch, potabang, potabang. Maybe say it. Maybe I'll just go and recite each of these words that's different, and then you recite after me. I'll begin with the anyang in each case, starting with sadda. Anyang ekasaddam. Anyang ekagandang. Anyang ekarasang. Anyang ekapotabang. Okay, so that is the first five suttas. Now the next five just inverts the relationship. I'll recite, we'll take the first one as a paradigm, then the others will just follow from that. Nahang bhikkave, you can receive. Anyang ekarupampi. Samanupassami. Yang evang. Ittya chitang. Pariyadaya titati. Yatai dung, bhikkave, purisa rupang. Purisa rupang bhikkave, ittya chitang, pariyadaya titati. And the meaning, you could just give the meaning straight. You don't have to break down and analyze because it's just the converse of the preceding. Anybody want to give the meaning? Okay.
Oh, monks, I do not see even one other form.
Yeah.
Which thus, having overpowered the mind of a woman, remain. As this,
yeah.
Oh, monks, the form of a man.
Right. And then the next.
Form of a man, O monks, having overpowered the mind of women.
A woman.
Of a woman.
Yeah.
Remain.
Right. Okay. Then the next four suttas. No other sound, no other scent, no other taste, no other touch. Okay. Any questions on this? Okay, then we'll go into lesson two. I'll try to cover the main grammatical points. Okay, now we come, look on page 18, where we have the grammatical explanations. First I'll explain the grammar, then I will go through the readings at the front of the lesson, explaining. And then after that, which will no doubt be next week or even the week after, we come to the further readings, then you have to help me by doing them. Okay, this now is the feminine nouns ending in long A in A. This is actually the most common class of the feminine nouns. Reverend Anthony thought it would be a good idea if I went through the paradigms, reciting them, and you reciting after me. So we'll try that. He thinks it will help you to remember better. But it's really necessary to get a good grip on Pali. I regret having to say this, but it's really important to be able to memorize the paradigms, at least to the point where you can recognize them when you see them. What you have to do, though, is get to the point where you can visualize them in your mind so that you actually write them out a few times, test yourself so that you can reproduce them on paper without looking at the book. And then if you do that a few times, then you'll be able to recognize them when you come across them in reading selections. Okay, taking sala, which means hall. Okay, sa. I'll go down from nominative to vocative. Sala means hall. Like this is actually, we could say it's a kind of sala. This is a dhamma, we would call this a dhamma sala, a dhamma
exactly
hall.
The same as Spanish.
What is Spanish?
Spanish, sala.
Is it really
sala?
Oh, remarkable. It could actually be from, actually the word hall is probably also in some way derived from the same original Indo-European stem form. You see, just somehow the S tends to get changed into an H. This happens even in singular. And so from sala, you drop the final long A, sal, then the S gets changed to an H and you get hall. No, that's not. That's probably the way it happened. Okay, sala, salang, salaya, and then this locative, salayang. You have a vocative, sale. So I don't think anybody. Vocative means when you call. The form that you use when you call somebody, nobody speaks to a hall, but you could have a form like, okay, say a Buddha is addressing a woman lay devotee who's an upasika, and so in addressing her, he could say upasike, or addressing a woman disciple, say her name is Buddha, so he would call her Buddha. Okay. And you notice that there's a tendency, as one gets into certain noun forms, the, what's called the indirect cases, genitive, dative, instrumental, ablative, and the locative as well, tend to coalesce into one form, which makes Pali fairly easy. And we had the feminine in lesson one, Rati, night, is on page 6. You have genitive, dative, instrumental, ablative, and even locative, all Ratiya. And the feminine with the long I, Nadi, Nadiya. Okay, then the plural forms, Salayo, or more simply, Sala. Then genitive dative, salanang. Then instrumental ablative, these two tend to coalesce. Salahi. Or in verse, in poetry, you would get salabi. Then salasu. Then nobody addresses several halls, but suppose the Buddha's addressing a group of women lay devotees, he might say, upasikayo, or upasika. Okay. So that is the feminine with the long, the feminine long A stem. Now we come to a masculine stem ending in U. One example of this is the word bhikkhu, which means Buddhist monk. I'll go again down singular, then plural. Nominative, okay. Bhikkhu. Bhikkhung. Then the usual genitive dative, bhikkhuno. Then I think maybe in the commentaries, or maybe in verse, occasionally you get bhikkhusa. Instrumental ablative, most common is bhikkhuna. And occasionally ablative, really, not instrumental. Bhikkhusma bhikkhumha. Then locative, bhikkhumhi, or bhikkhusmin. And the vocative, the simple address, is bhikkhu. Okay, now plural. Bhikkhu or bhikkhavo. Then genitive, dative, bhikkhunam. Instrumental ablative, bhikkhuhi. Excellent. And the variant form, bhikkhubi. And then the locative, bhikkhusu. And vocative, bhikkhu. Or here, bhikkhave. Or bhikkhavo. Okay, now we have a neuter stem ending in U. Example given is chakku, meaning eye. Chakku or chakkung. Genitive dative, chakkuno or chakkusa. Instrumental ablative, chakuna or chakusma chakumha. Locative, chukasmin. Chakusmin. Did I say chakumhi, chakusmin?
No, you only said chakusmin.
Oh, I skipped over chakumhi. Okay. Chakumhi. Chakusmin. And I don't know if anybody speaks to eyes, but we have a vocative form, chakku. I don't know if it ever occurs. Chakku. Okay. Okay, then the plural. Here it's just the U is extended a little bit. Chakku. Chakuni. Chakunang. Chakuhi. And then the variant, chakubi. And locative, chakusu. Again. Chakku. Chakuni. In case you want to speak to your eyes in Pali, you now know how to call them. Okay, now we have what are called the pronouns. Pronoun can either substitute for a noun, this is the true pronoun, like we say he, she, it, or these same words can function as what we would call pronominal adjectives. That is, it would be, you say, that man went to the shop. It would be, that would be the same form as saying he went to the shop. It would be so or sa. Okay, we'll go through. Okay, the main forms for masculine are so, feminine, sa, neuter, tongue. Then the declension is as follows. First I'll go down. Masculine, so or sa. And accusative, tongue. Then for neuter, either tongue, that's the usual one, is tongue. Then tud is used occasionally in front of a vowel in order to make smooth transition. Then they have the indirect cases are the same for masculine and neuter. Tassa. Tena, tamha, or tasma, and tamhi, or tasmin. Then feminine, starting from nominative, sa, tongue, then tasa, or tasaya. and the variant Tisa or Tisaya. But then there's a form which can be used for all four, genitive, dative, instrumental, ablative, Taya. And then for the locative, Tasang, Tayang, Tisang, Tasang. Don't be worried by the variants. The most common would be Tasang. Tasang. But Tayang occasionally one would get to. Okay, now the plural. Okay, Te, the neuter Tani. Then the indirect cases come coalesce. Tesang or Tesanang. But Tesang is very, very common. Tesanang, probably very rare. Tehi, or in poetry, Tebi. And locative, Tesu. Feminine, Ta or Tayo. And genitive, dative, Tasang or Tasanang. Tahi, Tabi, and Tasu. Okay, now the form that's given next is created just by adding the letter E to all of the forms that we've just gone through. So we have like Aso, Atung, Atasa, Atena, Atamha, Atamhi, Atung, Atad, Asa, Atung, etc. And basically the difference is the tongue forms generally mean that, something away from oneself. Atung has the sense of this, something closer to oneself. So they're contrasted as this and that. Then here, now 2.13, we have the relative pronoun. Is virtually the same, has the same forms as tongue, except for the initial Y. But as we have, the relative is, that is, we say, which, and the tongue forms are demonstrative, that. Which glasses I use, those glasses are on the desk. I don't know a Pali word for glasses. The tongue form has the sense of that. The young is which. The tongue is that. I'm going to come to that in explaining the grammar. I don't think it's necessary to go through these. It's just the same. You just say, okay, yo, young, yasa, yena, yamha, yamhi. Can you do that quickly? Ablative.
Yeah,
yamha or yasma. Don't worry too much about the meanings of them now, just learn them. You'll get the meanings as we go along, how they're used. Then the plural, okay, ye, yani, and so on. And now there's another form of the pronoun meaning this, which the masculine nominative is ayang. Here we have ayang, they only give a few forms here, ayang and imang, you say. Then for neuter, imang and idang, actually idang is much more common, idang. Then the feminine is ayang and imang, same as the masculine. But then with the plural there's a difference, ime. Neuter, imani. Feminine, ima. Or imayo. In 2.2, they say all of the pronouns used in 2.11 to 2.14 can be used either alone that is as pronouns, like here we have aso gacchati. He goes, that this I would say this one goes. Or they can be modifying following nouns, that is, they become demonstrative adjectives, or I know the expression, pronominal adjectives. Eso dhammo, that means this doctrine. The interrogative katama, which has the sense of which, what, takes the same endings as the pronouns in two above. Thus, the next page, katamo, katamang, and the neuter is katamang, the feminine is katama, and accusative, katamang. Katamasa, yeah, the rest, katamasa, we get. It says that the remaining forms are the same. They have the same endings as in two above. But I know katamasa, katamena, one might get. Katamamha? I don't think we would have that expression. But okay, we go on to number four. This is called the infinitive. The infinitive is the verb in English. We say to, like to go, to be, to buy, to see. And in Pali, it's formed by using the ending. The most common form for the infinitive is the ending tung. Okay, so here they give some examples. Just about all of them are really superseded, these examples, by variant, by irregular forms of the infinitive. So bhavati means to be, to become. So we would get the infinitive bhavitung, which would mean to be, to become. Gacchati gives the infinitive gacchitung. Labhati, labhitung. Pasati, and the infinitive pasitung. Okay, that's the way the infinitive is formed for the when the present tense stem is formed with the short a, You just drop the short a and you add the itum, itung. Now for verb forms which end in long a, e, o, just add tung directly. Okay, some examples. Anyati, to comprehend. So to the present stem, anya, one adds the tung to get anyatung. Deseti is to teach. Yeah, and you get the infinitive desetung. Neti, to lead. You get the infinitive netung. Yati, to go, gives the infinitive yatung. And hoti, to be, gives the infinitive hotung. Now, some of the more common verbs take irregular infinitives. For example, karoti gives katung. Katung. Gacchati, you just recite the infinitive. Gacchati gantum. Now, janati nyatung. You might wonder, how from janati do you get nyatung? Yeah. Yeah. No, it should be with the ung sound. It's ung, like ung. Right. Okay, the problem question, how from Janati you get Nyatum? This is because the original Sanskrit root is jinya. Jinya, very difficult sound. In Pali, one never gets that difficult sound. And so in Pali, this root got changed from jinya to the more comfortable nya. But this, call this the third person singular, the stem form, is from the original jnya, gives jan, janati. Oh, I'm sorry. Nya. And so the infinitive here is formed from the stem. One could, in theory, one could say Jani Tung also, but more typically Nyatung is used. Okay, then from Titati we get Tatung. That's formed directly from the root Ta. Then Dahati, to put or puts, we get Dahitung. Dahitung. Then Deity or Tadati is third person singular for to give, for one gives. The infinitive is Datung. Now this will be a little strange. From Pusati one gets the infinitive Datung. That is excuse me, somebody said something? The what? Yeah. This is because there were actually two verbs used in Sanskrit to mean to see. In Pali, they form the active verb from the root pasati, he sees, as here. But other forms are derived from the root dis. One doesn't have the ordinary active verb form from desity, but one does have a passive form, say desity, is seen, or a causative form. Don't be worried by these grammatical terms that I'm using. I just want to show different verbs coming from this root. Dasaiti, to show. And from this root, you also get the noun ditti, meaning view. Dasana, meaning vision or seeing. But the original, the root pas is retained for present forms, pasati. Papunati, you get papunitung. Okay. Pivati, you get Patung. This is formed directly from the root pa, meaning to drink. Then miyati, dies. You get maritung, to die. From labati, you get a rather strange form, ludung, to gain, to obtain. Vikinati, you get a form vikinitung. And from sunoti, you could form one infinitive from the root. You get sotung, or from the present active form sunitung. Okay. Okay, then the text gives us some uses of the infinitive. For example, 4.21, easier to take the example. I am going to see the Buddha. Buddhang dattung gacchami. Here this is using that irregular form from pasati, dattung. And then here we have in 4.22 an example taken from the reading. Papaniko abhabho anadigattang bhogang adigantung. Want to try that? Papaniko abhabho anadigattang bhogang adigantung. Here, papaniko is a merchant. Abhabho means incapable. Then go over to the last word, adigantung, the infinitive, to acquire. Then unadigattang bhogang, unacquired wealth. So a merchant is unable to acquire unacquired wealth. Sometimes I can't figure out grammatical explanations. But I think I know the meaning of any sentence in Pali that I read, but I don't understand the meaning of grammatical explanations in English. And this is one of those sentences. But don't worry, when we come across sentences, then I'll explain them correctly. Okay, now these are called, in Section 5, equational sentences. Okay, what this means is a sentence, to put it quite simply, where you say one thing is the same as another. They give some examples. Harry is a carpenter. Harry is one thing, carpenter is something else, but the two are equated with the word is, which is called grammatically the copula, where I say, this book is excellent. Is, the word is functions as the copula. It joins the book and excellent to mean that it's this book, which is excellent. Now, in English, when we make a sentence, we always have to have the copula when we make an equational sentence. But in Pali, one can drop the copula, and it's done quite commonly in verse. For example, here are some examples. Eso dhammo sanantino. No, eso means this. Dhammo, here doctrine or principle. Sanantino, eternal, everlasting. And that in itself would be a complete sentence. We don't need a verb hoti, though we could have one. But we could, when we see a sentence like this, we can just simply understand that there is an implicit copula, implicit word is. And in Ayang Papaniko Abhabho, this merchant simply incapable, but the word is implied, it's understood. Or in the phrase Kichang Jivitang, Kichang is difficult, Jivitang life. So difficult is life. Life is difficult to obtain. And the adjective agrees with the subject. this doesn't mean that they've had some argument, some difference of opinion, and now the adjective has been convinced that it was wrong and it's agreeing with the subject. But rather it means that if the subject is, say, nominative, masculine, singular, then the adjective has to be, that qualifies it, has to be nominative, masculine, singular. If the subject is neuter, feminine, the adjective will be neuter, feminine. 5.2 with noun as predicate. Okay, example, etang sasanang. This is the teaching. Okay, now this is number 6 is the one that I find the explanation difficult, but I could illustrate what is meant. Okay, first, you see, I didn't study English grammar. I know English grammar, but it's like I drink water, but I don't know the chemistry of water. I breathe air, I don't know the chemistry of air. So I'm not familiar with English grammatical terms very well. But we have, in an English sentence, relative clauses and demonstrative clauses. And in Pali, these two have to be correlated with each other. So, okay, when there's a relative clause in Pali, here I'm reading from the explanation. In this construction, the relative clause is introduced by a relative pronoun or other relative form, as in the construction met earlier. However, the relative clause is not placed within the main clause, but the two clauses are kept intact and placed in sequence. The relative clause still modifies a noun or pronoun in the main clause. This modified form is commonly placed at the beginning of its clause also. And if a noun is generally modified by a demonstrative form, commonly one of the pronominal forms given in section 2 above, which links it to the relative, that is, it is as if in English one said, which book I read, that book is good, instead of saying, the book that I read is good. Okay, some examples that he gives makes it clear. Okay, young janami, tung banami. What I know, that I speak. In other words, I speak what I know. Or yo dhammo saddhammo, so dhammo sanantano. Okay, that doctrine which is true doctrine, which doctrine is true doctrine, that doctrine is eternal. In other words, the doctrine which is the true doctrine is eternal. Well, that which is the true Dhamma is an eternal Dhamma. Occasionally, for special emphasis, one can invert the sequence. So you have the demonstrative clause first and then the relative clause afterwards, as in this example. Eteva satta bahutara ye nalabanti tathagatang dasanaya. Okay. Eteva satta. These beings, bahutara, are more numerous. Ye na labanti tathagatam dasanaya, who do not get to see the Tathagata. In normal order, one would say, ye satta na labanti tathagatam dasanaya, eteva satta bahutara. Those beings who do not get the Tathagata, who get to see the Tathagata, those beings are more numerous. Or another example, I will give famous saying, yo buddhang passati, so dhammang passati. Yo buddhang passati, One who sees the Buddha, so Dhammang Passati, he sees the Dhamma. Then, Yo Dhammang Passati, so Buddhang Passati. One who sees Dhamma sees the Buddha. One who sees Dhamma, that one sees Buddha. And we have a lot of these relative and demonstrative forms that are correlated. We'll meet with them repeatedly. We have yo, so, which one, he, ya, sa, again, which one, she, yada, when, then, yato, tato, also meaning when, then, yata, as, thus. There are some more. We'll come across them as we read on. Okay, I'll just get one more grammatical point in here. Number 7. Again, this is something a bit new to me as far as explanations go. Prepositions and postpositions. In addition to prepositions, which precede the noun, as in English, Pali also has postpositions, which follow the noun, but have the same function. Some forms can occur as either. One of these is anyatra. With a dependent noun and the instrumental, it means outside or apart from. But with a dependent noun and the locative, it means among. So anyatra manusesu, they say among men or among human beings. But anyatra manusesu, anyatra manusehi, or manusehi anyatra, outside of human beings, apart from human beings. And then number 8, there is an abbreviation that one comes across in some readings. It's in Pali, the full form is Peyalang, but it's usually abbreviated to P-E, Pei. It really has a function similar to the English. It's actually the Latin form, etc., which we write ets, E-T-S. Like if you've read Pali Suttas, you know many passages are repetitive. The Buddha will make a long statement about the aggregate of material form. Then he will say the same thing about feeling, perception, the mental formations and consciousness. And so the text, rather than repeat the same thing for each of the aggregates, they'll spell it out completely in the case of form. For example, I'll say in English, form, O monks, the Buddha is speaking to the monks, he says, what do you think, O monks? Is form permanent or impermanent? And the monks say, impermanent, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent pleasant or pleasurable or painful? The monks say, painful, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent, is it fitting to regard what is impermanent, painful, and subject to change as this is mine, this is I, this is myself? Then the monks say, no, Venerable Sir. Then instead of repeating the same thing when it comes to form, the text will say that we'll have the first line, is feeling permanent or impermanent? Pei. Is perception permanent or impermanent? Pei. Are the mental formations permanent or impermanent? Pei. And then is consciousness permanent or impermanent? And usually with the last item in the list, they'll repeat the same thing again in full. So the middle ones are usually abbreviated with Pei, which means payalung, which is has something of the sense of repetition series, payalung. Okay, if there are any questions, please. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there is a rule. I don't know the exact wording of it. I'll look that point up. But if there's also, if there is a double consonant, an accent will fall on the double consonant as well. Let me take an example. Okay. Actually, I see words with two double consonants. On page 15, we have the word sakatchang. I just write it, which means carefully. Yeah, here it seems the stress will come the first double consonant. Yeah, anyway, if there is a double consonant, the accent will come on that. If there are several double consonants in a word, it will come on the first double consonant. If there is a long vowel, it will come, the stress will come on that long vowel. I'm trying to think. Janapada. Okay, this is a word without a long vowel, without a double consonant. Janapada. I think that's on the first syllable. Bhikkhave has the double consonant. So, yeah. Anyway, I've made a recording of, so far I think I've done 8 lessons, but 6 lessons are on one disc. They'll be given out next week. I've read all of the readings, both the main reading and the further readings. Yeah. Well, you see, many impersonal objects are still represented by either masculine or feminine nouns. Let me see if I could find some examples. Okay. Padipo is lamp. That's a masculine noun, but of course a lamp is not a person, it's neither feminine nor masculine, but just somehow it came to be represented as a masculine noun. So the relative pronoun yo would go with padipo, but if you have an object which is considered neuter, okay, dukkang, suffering, that would have to take the relative form yang dukkang. Yeah, yang dukkang tang anichang, you could say. What is suffering, that is impermanent. So the relative pronoun has to agree with the noun that it qualifies. If that noun is a masculine noun, whether it's a male person or an inanimate object, the relative pronoun will be the male singular, the male relative pronoun, yo. If it's an inanimate object, it will be yang. If it's a feminine, it will be the feminine form ya. Ya rati. Night is not masculine, not feminine, but it is represented as a feminine noun. So it's ya rati. With padipo. Well, here, padipo or padipa is the object, so that has to be said in the accusative. Yo padipang pasati, so, let's see, one who sees the lamp. Okay, so dukkang pasati, he sees suffering. Okay, but don't worry about the grammatical explanations if they seem complicated. But once we go into the sentences, then I think you'll pick it up intuitively. just once we get accustomed to working through sentences and seeing how different words function in the sentences. But to be able to really improve your knowledge of and understanding of the Pali, it's important to go through the sentences. I can't overstress this point. To write out the Pali, write a word-for-word literal translation, trying to understand the function of each word. And then once you do this literal word-for-word translation, then write out an idiomatic English translation, a translation in ordinary English diction, so that to make sure, to convince yourself that you really understand it. And don't worry if you make mistakes. We all make mistakes. But it's by making mistakes that we learn to correct them and then to become more fluent and more at home in the language. About the ablative. To explain what it is? Okay, it's used to indicate from something, from someone, because of something. Let me give an example. Okay, we could say a very simple sentence. Ahang vihara, or viharamha, viharasma, gehang gachami. Okay, I, from the monastery, vihara is monastery or temple, lablative, amha, from, or we could say simply, vihara, or viharasma, gehang, home, gachami, I am going. So I am going home from the monastery. But also ablative, it's used sometimes with a more philosophical sense of causation. Here, from the condition of ignorance, the volitional formations arise. Here, paccaya, this is an ablative form. From this, that occurs. We'll meet ablatives as we go. Go along. Yeah. It's the accusative, yeah.
But can't you use that as a locative?
No, because locative has the meaning of in or on. You would think maybe it would seem that you might, it might be appropriate to use the dative. Yeah. But you see, the verb to go has built into it the sense of going to. So the verb to go takes accusative. Okay, any additional questions? Okay, then we will stop for the day and return next week.